Congratulations to her. VOA won the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, Dan Novak tells us how the short-lived rebellion in Russia brought a sense of hope for Ukrainian forces. Katie Weaver presents this week's Health and Lifestyle Report. We close with the next part of our U.S. history series. But first,
in Russia, the armed rebellion against the government ended in less than 24 hours. However, the apparent disorder within the Russian military might help Ukrainian troops. It has also improved morale. Yevgeny Prigozhin is leader of the Wagner Group, a group of military fighters who are not part of Russia's military, but worked with it in the past. Prigozhin attempted what is being called a mutiny in the Russian military city of Rostov-on-Don late last week. Russia's struggle to protect Moscow were met with cheers by Ukraine's military commanders, said a spokesperson, Serhiy Cherevity. Any chaos and disorder on the enemy's side benefits us, he said. More statements from Ukraine's top commanders described the situation as a sign of more problems to come. The crisis ended with a deal that would send Prigozhin into exile in Belarus. But Ukrainians were watching closely. They said that Russian President Vladimir Putin, agreeing to a deal hours after calling Prigozhin a traitor, made him appear weak. The crisis did not seem to affect Russia's army along the 1,000-kilometer front line in eastern Ukraine. But it could give Ukraine the energy it needs to strengthen the beginning of its expected counter-offensive. Military leaders have said it is going slower than expected. Nigel Gold Davies is a military expert at the International Institute for Strategic Affairs based in London. He said the crisis kept attention away from the war in the short term. In the longer term, it shows a lack of unity among Russia's soldiers. It's terrible for Russia's morale, the officers and soldiers alike. It's very good for Ukraine's morale, Gold Davies said. Andriy Kvasnitsia is a 50-year-old Ukrainian soldier. Everyone is excited, he said. Hanna Malyar is Ukraine's deputy defense minister. She said as Wagner troops marched towards Moscow, Ukraine made progress in several directions along the front line where fighting has been going on for weeks. She said Russian gains were stopped further to the north. Russian defense minister Sergei Shoigu said last week that a new reserve army would be formed by the end of June. The new troops would strengthen Russia's military along the Ukrainian front. Russia has sent 90% of its forces there, and they already outnumber Ukrainian fighters. Experts say the Ukrainians need to remain quick and ready to change plans to hurt Russia along the front line. With modern NATO weapons systems, strong morale is important to perform well. Ukrainian commanders told their fighters they had indirectly caused the problems in Russia. Cherevity said the heroes of Bakhmut, who held the city for 10 months and exhausted the enemy, are responsible for this. The truth is more complex, however. The conflict between Prigozhin and the Russian military leadership began before the invasion. Wagner's effectiveness, compared to the regular armies, raised Prigozhin's popularity. It may have led him to go ahead with the rebellion. In Ukraine's southeastern Zaporizhia area on Sunday, soldiers fired at Russian targets from their positions. They directed their anger at Russia with each shell. I'm Dan Novak.
Wildfire season has begun in many places around the world. The dangerous smoke wildfires produce can spread far and wide. It blocks sunlight, poisons the air, and damages health of people and other living things. Some of those living things could be the plants in your garden, says gardening expert Jessica Damiano. She writes gardening stories for the Associated Press. Damiano lives in New York City and recently experienced several days of very smoky air. Wildfires in eastern Canada were the source. Damiano, like other people, limited the time she spent outdoors when the air quality was poor. She also wore a face covering or mask when she had to go outside. But the plants in her garden had no such escape. They had to breathe the poisoned air through the extremely small pores in their leaves. Brooke Edmonds is a plant scientist and community horticulturalist with Oregon State University Extension. She said plants subjected to smoke for a short amount of time will usually bounce back or recover quickly. It depends on how close you are, she said. There could also be a localized effect, where one garden is covered in ash and a half mile away there's nothing, because that's the way the wind was moving things around. Pollutants and small particulate matter landing on your plants can block sunlight, which is essential for photosynthesis. Reduced photosynthesis results in reduced energy. That means slower growth. Additionally, with longer exposure, organic compounds found in smoke can interfere with a plant's ability to take in nutrients. Any damage will not be noticeable right away. The best thing home gardeners can do is keep an eye on plants, Edmonds advises. She suggests giving your plants some extra love and care for the entire season after exposure. Most will pull through, Edmonds added. Wash your plants with a gentle spray from a hose to remove substances left by smoke. Then give them a long, slow drink of water. Also, hold off on fertilizer until the air clears and plants fully recover. Edmonds said people should not use leaf blower machines to remove ashes from plants. You do not want to risk breathing in what is blowing around. Always protect yourself as the gardener, she said. Ash can change soil chemistry. If you find more than a dusting of ashes in your garden after a wildfire, bring a little of it to an expert for testing. And if you live in an area where wildfires are common, plant smoke-resistant species that will better withstand future exposures. Native plants are usually stronger than those from other areas. Finally, if you find ash on vegetables and other food plants, Edmonds suggests washing them before eating them. Use a solution of 1 part vinegar and 9 parts water. Or, she said, take the skin off the vegetable. The ash is on the surface only. Your food will be safe and tasty. I'm Katie Weaver.
You just heard Katie Weaver present this week's Health and Lifestyle Report. Katie joins me to chat a little more about the story. Hi, Katie.
Hello, Ashley.
The fires burning in eastern Canada spread smoke across many parts of the United States. Here in Washington, D.C., the air quality was quite bad for several days earlier this month.
Yep. My eyes would start to itch, burn, and sting as soon as I walked outside.
Same. But conditions were definitely worse in parts of Pennsylvania and New York than in Washington.
True. I wonder if affected plants were able to bounce back.
I'm glad you mentioned that expression, bounce back. I heard the horticulturist in your article use those words to mean recover quickly.
Right. It also suggests that there are no long-term effects. Basically, the plant goes back to its former condition right away. The expert Edmonds could also have used the term snap back. And the terms are not used in connection with health only.
What do you mean?
Well, let's say you take a long vacation and get very relaxed. You take naps every day and you don't think too hard about anything. You just rest. Then the vacation ends and you return to the office. You have to snap back to productivity.
Well, the vacation part sounds dreamy.
Ha! Yes. It is a dream, but we have to snap back to reality and get to work.
Well, thanks again, Katie, for being here today.
My pleasure. See you again soon.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember.
The presidential race looks jar-lid tight. We could be in for a long night as voters decide whether Vice President Al Gore or Texas Governor George Bush will be the next president of the United States. It is that close.
In 2000, Americans were preparing to elect a new president in November. The United States Constitution limits presidents to two terms. Bill Clinton would be leaving office, so his Democratic Party needed to choose a new candidate. The Democrats nominated Clinton's vice president, Al Gore. Gore chose Senator Joseph Lieberman of Connecticut as his running mate. Lieberman became the first Jewish candidate ever nominated by a major party to such a high office. He was first elected to the Senate in 1988. Al Gore was born in Washington in 1948. He was named after his father, a United States Senator from Tennessee. The future vice president grew up in Washington and in Carthage, Tennessee, where his family had a farm. He studied government at Harvard in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and graduated in 1969. That was during the Vietnam War. His father opposed American involvement in that war. But the young Al Gore joined the Army and spent about 6 months of his service as a military journalist in Vietnam. Back in civilian life, Gore again worked as a reporter. Later, he studied religion and then law at Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee. But he dropped out of law school to enter politics. He was elected to the United States House of Representatives in 1976. He became known for supporting nuclear arms control and protecting the environment. Al Gore was elected to the Senate in 1984. He was re-elected 6 years later. That was after he had tried to become the Democratic candidate for president in 1988. Then, in 1992, Bill Clinton won the party's nomination and asked Al Gore to be his vice president. As vice president, Gore became known for his work on issues involving the environment, technology, and foreign relations. In March 1999, he gave an interview on CNN. During that interview, he talked about his plans to enter the race for the presidential nomination the following year. He made the statement that during his service in Congress,
I took the initiative in creating the Internet.
He went on to say that he took the initiative in moving forward other efforts important to the economy, environmental protection, and educational improvements. But his comment about the Internet led to jokes and criticism that he was claiming to have actually invented it. The Republicans nominated Texas Governor George W. Bush as their presidential candidate. For his running mate, he chose Dick Cheney, a former Secretary of Defense. George Walker Bush was born in Texas in 1946, the oldest child of former President George Herbert Walker Bush. He grew up in the Texas cities of Midland and Houston. He graduated from Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut, and earned a master's in business administration at Harvard University. During the Vietnam War years, he was a pilot in the Texas Air National Guard.
Later, he worked in the state's oil and gas industry. In 1988, Bush worked on his father's winning campaign for president. Later, he became one of the owners of the Texas Rangers, a Major League Baseball team. In 1994, George W. Bush was elected governor of Texas. He was re-elected 4 years later. Several other candidates also ran for president in the November 2000 election. These minor, or so-called third-party candidates, included activist Ralph Nader. He represented the Green Party. He criticized large corporations for having too much influence in America. Pat Buchanan, a conservative, ran as the Reform Party candidate. Public opinion surveys showed that the race between George Bush and Al Gore would be extremely close. The election took place on November 7th. More than 100 million people voted for them. Al Gore received about 540,000 more of those votes than George Bush did. But winning the popular vote does not make someone president. Americans do not directly elect their president. When they vote for a candidate, what they are really doing is voting for electors. The number of electors for each state is based on the size of its congressional delegation, which is based on population. These electors then vote in December in a system known as the Electoral College. The Electoral College officially elects the president. In the 2000 election, there were 538 electors in the Electoral College. To become president, the winner needed a simple majority of 270. Al Gore won the popular vote, but neither he nor George Bush won a majority of the electoral votes. Not that any of this was clear on election night.
Bulletin, Florida pulled back into the undecided column. This thing is so wild, wacky, and woolly, nobody knows how it's going
to
come out.
CNN right now is moving Florida to the too close to call column.
Too close to call.
Florida is now too close to call. I want to say that again. It's a confusing situation. Now, if you're disgusted with us, frankly, I don't blame you.
Florida is a big southern state. It had enough electoral votes to make either candidate the winner. Election officials counted almost 6 million votes on election night. George Bush had slightly more votes than Al Gore, but not enough to avoid a recount. Florida state law calls for a recount when the difference between two candidates is less than 0.5% of the votes. State recounts normally involve the governor, but the governor of Florida said he would not get involved. That was because the governor was Jeb Bush, George Bush's brother. And there were other issues with the election. Some black voters said election workers had unjustly prevented them from voting. There were also problems with voting machines and ballots. In one area, some Gore supporters believed they had voted for Pat Buchanan by mistake. The names were next to one another on the ballot. Democrats said the ballot design was illegal. Republicans said Democratic Party officials had never objected to it. The disputed election results in Florida introduced a new term into popular speech. Americans began talking about chads, whether it was hanging chads,
pregnant chads or dimpled chads, it amounted to the same problem. It meant that a voting machine had not cleanly punched out a bit of paper called a chad when the voter made a choice. As a result, the ballot would confuse a vote-counting machine and make the choice unreadable. That, in turn, meant election workers had to look at each questionable ballot and try to decide the voter's choice. All this took place with the nation and the world watching and wondering who would become America's next president. Something else only added to anger and debate over the situation in Florida. Florida's Secretary of State, its chief election officer, Catherine Harris, also happened to be a leader of the Bush campaign there.
Governor George W. Bush, 2,912,790.
Almost 3 weeks after the election, Florida officials declared George Bush the winner of the state's 25 electoral votes. That gave him a total of 271. Out of 6 million ballots, state officials said he had defeated Al Gore by 537 votes. But the election was still not over. Gore and his supporters in Florida asked the courts to reject the results because of what they said were the many voting problems. The Florida Supreme Court ordered another count of the disputed ballots. Bush campaign officials quickly appealed to the United States Supreme Court. The court said Florida law did not explain how officials should judge the ballots. The court found the situation in Florida unconstitutional because there were different standards around the state. The justices also said not enough time remained to settle the issue before the Electoral College had to meet. On December 12th, the court voted 7-2 to end the recount and 5-4 against ordering a new one. 6 days later, on December 18th, members of the Electoral College met in each state capital and the District of Columbia. They made the election official. George W. Bush would become the 43rd President of the United States.
I, George Walker Bush, do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
That I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
He took office on January 20th, 2001. The election dispute had divided Americans. But less than a year later, the nation was brought together by events that would set the direction for the presidency of George W. Bush.
A plane has just crashed into the World Trade Center here in New York City. It happened just a few moments ago.
The United States suffered the worst terrorist attacks in its history on September 11th, 2001, a day that would be remembered as 9/11.
That's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.